The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. You know, folks, I've met a lot of people in my life named Eric. My mailman's named Eric. The guy that cleans my pool is named Eric. And truth be told, I used to be named Eric myself. But Eric, you know who, didn't like me being another Eric, too, and said if I wanted to be his announcer, I had to change my name to Todd. Ugh, I hate the name Todd. What parent would ever name their kid Todd? It's so generic. But I needed the money, my kids gotta eat, and now here's the other Eric, Eric Metaxas.
Yeah. Yeah, Todd, that's right.
Yeah.
As far as we're concerned, you're Todd.
That's it.
All right?
Live with it.
I find that so funny and stupid. Okay. Like a lot of the stuff that I enjoy. Albin, Labor Day is coming up, Albin.
Now
we got a lot to talk about. First of all, people are tuning in. They don't want to know about Labor Day or whatever we're going to talk about now. They're going to say, who's your guest, Eric?
Yeah.
Who's your guest?
Who is he?
And I'll tell you what. We're not going to tell you.
No.
We're going to give you a hint, though.
Okay.
It's either,
okay.
This is multiple choice, it's either the subject, let's put it this way, the subject of this hour,
okay,
all right, either has something to do with playing golf,
okay,
or Adolf Hitler.
Okay. They're both the kind of like Labor Day subjects, if you think about
it.
Yeah,
they're kind of fun, summery.
Except for the Hitler one.
Golf and Hitler. Except for the Hitler one. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Both of them are, except for that
Hitler.
One. Right.
Yeah.
So in a couple seconds, we may talk about Adolf Hitler.
Okay.
Or we may not.
Yeah.
We may talk about, you know, a golfing and life, you know, that kind of thing.
That kind of
so
thing.
So one or the other.
Okay.
But we're not going to tell you.
No.
We're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Because I'm angry. Now, Albin, seriously, before we go to our official guest.
Okay.
Labor Day is coming up.
Yes.
I guess, let me just say, I'm going to be going to the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
With my lovely wife, Suzanne.
That's terrific.
Because her family's down there.
Mm-hmm.
And in Connecticut, where my folks are. There ain't no beach.
Aww.
There's no beach up in inland Connecticut. Who wants to go? You want to go to a lake?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Unless you have a boat and can water ski. So we're going to go down to see Suzanne's family on the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
So the question is you.
Well,
what
I'm
are
actually,
you
well,
do?
Part of the Labor Day weekend, because it's a long, long weekend, I am actually going to the Jersey Shore as well, because one of my great nieces is turning 1 year old, and so I'm going with the family, and we're going to celebrate there. You know,
what part of the Jersey Shore?
You know,
in case anybody listening wants to stalk you.
Or stalk you, I really can't remember, because we only go there like once a year. So whatever it is, we're going to put in GPS, and we're there.
All right, after the show, you've got to tell me.
Okay.
Because I think we could hook up on the beach, man.
We could,
man. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
All right. Now.
Okay.
I know something that you're going to do over Labor Day.
Yes, you know, because of this. I piled these pillows up.
Yes.
I'm
going to
do a lot.
People are listening on the radio. They can't
see these.
They can't see
these.
But right next to us are two really dramatically attractive, I would even say, extremely fetching pillows.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
They're
so attractive. I'm blushing. I've never seen pillows like this. Are these my pillows?
They are my pillows, and I am getting sleepy. I'm going to do a lot of sleeping over the Labor Day weekend.
All right. Now, it's interesting that you should bring this up, because our biggest sponsor on the show is MyPillow. If you go to MyPillow.com, now, this is not a joke. If you go to MyPillow.com, anything you get there, if you put in the code word Eric or Metaxas, you get our discount. It's a huge discount.
Yes, it is.
And it applies to everything. They're selling. What are they not selling at MyPillow.com? You go to MyPillow.com and say, you know what? I think I'd like to get a pet pillow. Okay.
Yep.
Can do. It's a big can do. Mike Lindell is a can do kind of guy. He's an American entrepreneur, former crackhead. He's crazy, but now he's crazy for good reasons. And this guy, you cannot imagine the energy that, I mean, his story is insane. We've had him on the program before. But this guy, on the website now, they're selling every kind of pillow imaginable, like selling travel pillows,
that's
the
right.
kind that you wear on the, you know, on the plane.
Yep.
I've never worn one of those on the plane. They've got the pet pillows. They've got body pillows.
Oh, yes.
Who uses a body pillow?
We do. We bought one of those. It's
Why?
Just great. You kind of snuggle up to it. It's great, especially, you know, if one of the two is away, you got the...
That's really sick. But okay. hey, we're not here to question your personal life.
Right.
Whatever you do on your own time is still sick.
Look.
But I want to say, if you're going to do it, you might as well get the Eric Metaxas Show discount.
So and, and get the mattress topper. By the way, when Ann and I were on vacation, we didn't have a lot of comfortable beds. We couldn't wait to get back. Back to that mattress topper.
Isn't that the, see, that's yeah. the spooky thing. Once you get the products from MyPillow.com,
right.
oh, those luxurious Giza
yep.
sheets.
Yes, that's right. We got them, too.
They haunt you when you're away.
Yes.
So you go on vacation. You're supposed to be having a good time.
Even the
All
ghosts
you can think of,
in the buildings, they were wearing Giza sheets. That's
is that
that's
so
what the
even,
yes.
they
even they are into
it. Well, because
they use the discount. So.
And because they feel so... they feel so smooth and luxurious
oh,
against
yes.
your lack of skin or body of any kind. If you're a ghost, and
yes.
if you're not a ghost, against your skin and body. But it really is incredible that all of that stuff comes with a whopping Eric Metaxas Show
That's
discount.
Right.
But you have to put in Eric Metaxas. And by the way, let's say you don't listen to the show. Let's say you've got a friend who hates me. They can still get the Eric Metaxas Show discount. Mike Lindell doesn't care. He's happy to give it to you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just put in Eric Metaxas. And I just want to say, this is the official pillow of Rip Van Winkle.
Yes.
From Tarrytown, New York, right?
That's right.
Isn't
and
that true?
That's my hometown,
And
yes.
that's true. It's hard to believe that
it
even before
hard.
My pillow,
mm-hmm.
Rip Van Winkle, nonetheless, he could see into the future.
He could.
And he understood that one day, a man, while he was still addicted to drugs, would invent a pillow that would change the world.
Yeah.
Alvin, it's changed our lives.
It has changed
Let's
mine.
Be honest.
Yeah.
I'm three times as rested now as I was before.
Yep.
At least that's what the doctors tell me. They said, Eric,
okay.
300% improvement.
Less makeup on you now because no more bags under the eyes.
Yeah, it's incredible. So MyPillow.com, if you're planning on sleeping in the future, and you know a lot of people sleep almost every night.
Once in a
I'm
while.
Not going to say that's necessarily you, but if you sleep every now and again or you know people who sleep, you go to MyPillow.com, you put in Eric or Metaxas, and you're going to get our whopping discount. Now, if you put in another code, like let's say you're watching TV and you see a MyPillow thing, they give you a different code to put in. Those are all Democrat codes. And
yes.
I know there's a lot of conservatives. You don't want to give your money to Elizabeth Warren.
No.
So you put in the code Eric Metaxas, and that way you're safe.
You
know
are.
What I'm saying? Because
yeah.
it's just, it's not right. Now, Albin, we're joking around here, but before we go, I want to tell people this is your last opportunity to give to Food for the Poor, which means it's your last opportunity to do a great thing for people who actually need our help. If we don't help them, they don't get help. There are families that are literally going hungry now on the border with Venezuela and Colombia. They have escaped the horror of socialist Venezuela. Maduro, the dictator, is not, you know, it's the same old story. Does he care about the people? No, he talks about it. But the people are starving. They're fleeing. We can help them, and I hope you will help them. If you haven't already, you go to MetaxasTalk.com. You click on the Food for the Poor banner, MetaxasTalk.com. I'm Metaxas. I'm talking right now. It's very simple to remember, MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com, the banner Food for the Poor. And anything you give, you'll be entered in a drawing to win our grand surprise,
yes.
Which is so vast. You will be embarrassed if you win. It's gonna be embarrassing. You're gonna have to move because all your neighbors are gonna say, "Hey, they're rich. Let's ask them for something."
Yeah.
You can also use your phone 844-863-HOPE. This is our last opportunity, folks. This is our last.
Yep.
If you wanna throw your ticket in the ring, if you wanna win, you know you can give anything. 844-863-HOPE. 844-863-HOPE. And I do want to say we haven't got any big gifts. If anybody out there wants to give to a great cause, $10,000 tax deductible, we want to thank you by having dinner with you. We'll work the whole thing out. It can be, you know, you can do it as a fun thing with 10 people, whatever it is. That's all up to you. But I just put that out there because it's tax deductible. It is a great cause. This is the last opportunity. You know, we can talk about socialism all day long. We kind of have to step up. These they're actual people suffering. So if you have an ability to give, I want to say this is a real need. It's an emergency. And Food for the Poor is a great organization. You can go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner, or you can just call 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. When we return, either Hitler or golf, we're not going to tell you. We may talk about golf. We may talk about Hitler. You don't know. Stick around, and you'll find out.
Nice again.
Portions of today's program are sponsored by Food for the Poor. I'm sitting here with a former pro golfer. He's very young to be a former anything. His name is Thane Marcus Ringler. He is now a speaker, author, coach, and entrepreneur living in Los Angeles, where I was just yesterday. Thane, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Eric. It's fun to be here.
How do you get to be a former pro golfer as young as you are? First of all, how do you get to be a pro golfer?
Well, I'll answer the first one first. The former, you just fail pretty quickly, right?
Failure.
Yes.
I can do that. I can fail.
Yeah, we all can. We definitely can. So to get there, to be honest, it's pretty easy. You just have to enter a tournament and declare you're a professional. And once you compete as a professional, you are a professional. So you can get there as well.
Wait a second. They would let me compete?
They would. Now, why? Most people don't, because once you lose your professional or your amateur status and you become a professional, it's usually a limbo period of 6 to 12 months to get your amateur status back. And if you're not serious about it, you can play in way better tournaments as an amateur than a professional.
All right. So now I know how to be a professional pro golfer, if I ever want to do that. And then all I have to do is stop, and I'll be a former pro golfer.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's a really nice tagline.
So you did that. So, and now, before we get into what you're doing today, where did you grow up, and how did you get to become what you are today?
Yeah, so I grew up in Hutchinson, Kansas, the heartland of America. You know, Superman's from Kansas, so it's a pretty good spot.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, 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 we share that. So, yeah, I grew up in Kansas my whole life and then moved out to Los Angeles to play golf at the Masters University, a Christian school out there. Competed 4 years with them and then did about 3.5 years professionally. Different mini tours around the U.S., got some status on the One Asia Tour, so got to go over to Asia for a handful of events in 2015, and then ended up staying in L.A., so here we are.
So you now, the title of your book is called From Here to There, A Quarter-Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. So the most obvious question is, how does a punk like you, how does a young man the idea of perspective, typically when we think of perspective, you would say, you know, I have perspective because I'm old or I've been,
yes.
But you're saying a quarter-life perspective. So the question is, what does that mean? In other words, how does somebody as young as you are, how old are you?
I'm 27 now.
27.
Yeah.
How does somebody as young as you are have perspective? In other words, what is that perspective that you have?
Totally. And I think that's calling me a punk is a very valid thing, because a lot of people are probably thinking that.
Hey, when you get to my age, anybody younger than me is by definition a punk.
Yes.
Just so you understand.
Naturally.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it.
It's sort of affectionate. I like young punks, because I was one until like an hour ago.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great to arrive. Yeah. So my grandfather had some great wisdom when I was starting this book. And part of the reason why I wanted to title it A Quarter Life Perspective is it's just that, my quarter life, right? When I was 25 was when I wrote it. And so I want it to be clear that it's just that. I still think it can be helpful, because there are people in that stage. And so speaking to the stage from the stage is a helpful perspective. But he said, you know, Thane, writing about this journey of life from mile marker 9 isn't very wise. You know, if you're running a marathon and you're on mile 9 and you're writing about the marathon, right, what are you doing? You know,
right,
so I was like, Touche, grandfather. That's a good one.
Right.
So having those perspectives are really helpful. But the perspective I really want to share is about the journey of becoming, from the process of becoming. And playing golf is one of the best arenas for personal development, because all of your results are based 100% on you. And you're on an island, and you have no one to blame, no teammates to pass the buck off to, no referees.
Actually, that's very, very forbidding as a concept. You're absolutely right.
It's interesting.
Wow.
And it's all in your head, too, which is what's crazy about it. Once you get to a certain tier of proficiency with the physical skills of it, it becomes a mental game. How can you deal with the external circumstances and pressures that you face?
Right.
And control the internal environment to produce your best results. And there's all these tensions at play, which is why the original idea for the book was I want to write. Well, to be honest, the original idea was I had a group of investors that had sponsored me and helped me pursue this journey. And when I was dealing with an injury the second half of my career, I was thinking about ways I could repay them. If I can't give them financially a repayment, what could I do? And so I thought, a book about what this journey has taught me would be a great way to gift them something like, look, this is what you've given me. And so that was the initial idea, is writing a book about what golf teaches you about life.
Right.
Because it is so instrumental in development. And I think for even all children, sports or any performing arts are such a helpful arena so that we can cage life principles in a way that we're actually receptive to as kids.
You know, it's very, very interesting because I do, in all seriousness, I'm fascinated whenever I think, I mean, you get to a certain age in life and you're kind of shocked that all the athletes are younger than you are. Because, you know, when you're growing up, they're all older than you are. And then at some point you think, what an amazing thing that young person can have the mental toughness to do that. I mean, you see a 16-year-old gymnast, or you see whatever, and you think, that is just extraordinary. And I can say for sure, at that age, I didn't have anything like that. I was not involved in anything like that. And I do think it is like a crucible of learning. So for you, first of all, I mean, I just want to go back before we get into this. What was it growing up? I mean, at what point did you pick up a golf club and say that I'm interested in playing golf?
Totally. Yeah. When I was like 3 or 4, my dad got me in the backyard holding a club.
This is like the Tiger Woods thing. So that's kind of interesting.
Okay. Yeah. And I loved all sports. Like, growing up in Kansas, you play everything. You know, it's not like you pick one and stay in it like you do in LA. But it was just awesome being out there competing with my dad, and we lived a mile from one of the best golf courses in the country.
So that kind of helps.
It does help. And to be honest, also, as a kid, I was hyper-competitive, and the reason why I gravitated towards golf was because I wanted to not have to rely on anyone else. I wanted to have full control of the results, which as a naive kid, it's great. And then you get a little older, like, yeah, it's not so great sometimes. But
yeah. Well, that's it's not a team sport.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it can be to some extent, but not typically. So you grew up playing golf, obviously, very, very young. And what's the name of the golf course where you grew up?
It's called Prairie Dunes Country Club. Perry Maxwell designed it, and it's just a gem. You know, you don't appreciate it till you leave, but now it's one of my favorite places in the whole world, and it's just like paradise. You know, it's a little piece of heaven on earth. So it definitely was just a gift to be able to grow up playing that, and it really did help. And, you know, being in Kansas, being a part of a country club, it's very much less the country club experience you would think, right? It's not uppity. It's not people really full of themselves. It's just, you know, normal Kansas folk going out and playing golf, which is really cool. So I appreciated that.
It's interesting. I've never been a golfer. I've played, I think I've played 3 rounds of golf in my life. And I realized that golf is one of those sports that it has the ambiance of it. The atmosphere is huge. You don't really feel that with other sports. But there's something about the feeling of being on a golf course, the concept of the pace and all that stuff. There is really something very different about it compared to all other sports. I was just at Highlands in North Carolina, and it was the Bobby Jones kind of created this golf course. And you think, wow, there is really there's a history and there's a feeling, and it's not something I've ever gotten into. But I have to say, there's really nothing to compare to it.
Yeah, the closest one I'd say is tennis, because it is in your head, it's in the individual as well, and it is kind of more of a country club sport in that sense.
Right.
But you're right, there is something about, I think that it's the dynamism of it, right? It's one of the most dynamic sports, because the courses are always changing, the weather's always changing, and your game is always shifting. And it's so minute in the differences in that, that you really have to be super adaptive in recognizing where you're at and what the conditions are and how to make pivots accordingly. And so I think the levels that are, I mean, in any sport, if you get to a high enough level, the whole game opens up tenfold, and there's so many aspects involved. And really, that's what I talk about in the book, to be honest, is there's this path to mastery broken out into simplicity, complexity, simplicity. Because based on this phrase that simplicity on the far side of complexity is what mastery is. And if you think about in any sport development, once you get past that sea of complexity and you're able to start pulling those simple, refined, perfect, practical applications of whatever skill it is in the right situation at the right time, those are the examples of mastery that we all love watching. I mean, when Michael Jordan hits a game-winning shot, I mean, that is like amazing picture of mastery.
That it's interesting as you put that, because I think it is true, and it really, not to get too heady, but it gets to what does it mean to be human. Our brains are just infinitely complex, and when you approach a sport, as you say, really anything, the closer you get to it, the more you see, the more complex it gets. But you're saying that there's a point at which you can go through to the other side. And I don't know if that's the 10,000 hour rule or whatever it is, but something like that. We're going to go to a break, actually. Folks, I'm talking to Thane Marcus Ringler. The book is From Here to There, A Quarter Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. We'll be right back. Marcus Ringler. The book is From Here to There, A Quarter Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. And if you look at the cover of the book, it's pretty obvious. We're looking at things from a golf perspective. It's green and white. And it just it's pretty clear that that's where you're coming from. I've got to ask you about your name. What is with the Thane Marcus Ringler? Is this because the world is filled with Thane Ringlers and you just want to stick out?
That's a great question. To be honest, I get emails a lot of times where people just in their minds jump over Thane and they just start calling me Marcus. So it's pretty ironic. I think Thane is just so unique that it just doesn't register for people.
Well, Thane makes a lot of people think of Macbeth.
Yes.
But
it's so my middle name is Marcus. And for golf, I had a brand that was Thane Ringler Golf. And it was a way to keep people updated on my progress and in the loop with through a website.
Yeah.
And so when I pivoted outside of golf into what I'm doing now, I wanted it to be clear it's still me, but it's a different thing. And so I rebranded under Thane Marcus, which is my middle name. And I always loved my middle name, so now we get to use it.
It's a very nice middle name, but it's a nice first and last name, too. You've got nothing to complain about name-wise. Now let's talk about the book. So what do you get into it? Like, who did you write the book for? When you say A Quarter-Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery, it seems to me that your audience would be young people.
Yes. Yeah. So it's really written for people in their 20s or 30s, a lot of times in the earlier stages of your career, trying to figure things out in life. And honestly, I probably wrote the book more for myself than anyone else. And through that, I really gained a lot of perspective. And I think the beauty of writing is that you become a better reader, first off, like Anne Lamott says. And second, it really refines your thinking on a subject matter. And I was really grateful for being able to take a prolonged dive into what development and mastery looks like to where I can now provide better value to the people I work with in that vein.
And why do you think in terms of development and mastery? In other words, do you think a lot of people are thinking about those terms? Why would somebody want to think about that? I think most people, typically, they just think about, you know, their career or whatever. So when you talk about mastery, why do you raise that that issue?
Yeah, I think the pursuit of individual mastery is something that we're all capable of. Everyone can pursue a level of mastery for themselves. And I believe fully that as humans, that's what we're called to do. Like, we're called to make the most out of this life. And so my rally cry is really for people to take ownership of their lives and to never settle for less than they're capable of. And if we can all do that individually, then that's how we see societal change really come into being. And as humans, we all want change. I mean, sometimes it's hard to admit that, but everything we do is geared around change in some way. And so this is, how can we take ownership and never settle so we can create positive change within ourselves and within those around us?
Well, the issue of mastery, in other words, I guess the question is, don't you have to figure out what it is that you want to do before you can know what you want to master, right?
Totally. And that's a great point. But I think in this stage of life, right, in the 20s and 30s, a lot of it is that exploration of figuring out, because you don't know until you do. So a lot of this season is just being okay with failing. Like, hey guys, you can fail. Failure isn't fatal, right? So you can go down a path and learn from that and learn whether or not that's what you want to do and then pick a new path. And I think that's one of the biggest messages from this book and what I like to talk about now is that we have this fear of failure that's this fear of dead ends. It's saying, if I go down this path long enough and I hit a dead end, then I have to go to the starting point again.
Right.
And that's a lie, right? That's a lie of failure. So what you can do though is take a few steps back from that dead end, pick a new path, and move forward with all the experience that you've already gained. So for me in golf, right, the biggest fear is, okay, I play professional golf and all my peers are getting ahead in the workforce. And then if I don't succeed, which the chances are likely, then I'm going to be behind all them. But what I realized that this actually propelled me further because of what it developed within me. Maybe not from a financial standpoint, but from a development standpoint, and it's prepared me for all the things I'm doing now. So you see this kind of beautiful synergy in it that I wouldn't have expected in the moment. And honestly, it was a fear that held me back a lot.
You seem very thoughtful and introspective for someone your age. Were you always that way? Did you grow up that way?
Not really, no. I think the competitive nature in me, that's what drove me to it. With golf, I knew how hard it would be to be successful, and I knew I couldn't leave any stone unturned if I was going to be successful at it. And so dealing with failure and not playing to the way that I was capable, and also dealing with injuries, led to so much introspection in that process that now it's become one of my muscles that I've developed, I guess, that really facilitates all the work I do now.
Well, it's got to be humbling, you know, especially when you're young. You're succeeding and then you get an injury. Like, that's not part of the plan.
Never. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely threw a wrench in the plans, but it was a year and a half of fighting a muscle strain in my back. And through that time, God really just shifted things in my heart. And it helped me learn a lot about my body and get more in my body outside of my head, yeah, which is a tough thing sometimes. So it's cool to look back now and see how it's been all used. But in the moment, it always feels horrible and confusing and frustrating. And
it's interesting because I think that this is why, I mean, as a Christian, the reason whenever I'm talking to somebody who doesn't share my faith, I want to say to them, listen, this is the only way to fly. Otherwise, life can be so frustrating. And so when something horrible happens to me, I had an injury, hurt my knee, and I couldn't run. And running was, for me, like everything. I was like, that was my way to get out of the house, to get exercise, to feel good, whatever. And so suddenly you bump up against this thing. You say, okay, if the Bible is true, then this injury will work together for good for that. And I can actually trust God with this. It's just an extraordinary thing to have that really positive perspective. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Thane Marcus Ringler. The book is From Here to There, A Quarter Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. Today is Thane Marcus Ringler, former pro golfer turned speaker, author, coach, and entrepreneur. I'm sitting here with your book, Thane, and with you. The book is From Here to There, A Quarter Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. You also have a podcast called The Up and Comers Show. Okay, so I have to ask you, what is the key? On the break, we were talking about the idea of introspection. It does seem to me that being able to see yourself is helpful. In fact, it's necessary, and it's part of the whole human project. And sometimes a setback forces you to do that.
It's one of the best methods, and I think it's so crucial. One of my favorite quotes about it is Chris Wirtz, who's an Enneagram guy, which is another great tool. He said, if you can't self-observe, you can't self-correct. And really, I think self-awareness is the key to opening up that far side simplicity of pursuing individual mastery, because you have to move from universal principles, which are given to us by our bosses, our coaches, our teachers, that are universally true, to individual principles, that out of all these universal principles that are true, what are the individual things for how I'm wired, how I'm equipped, how I'm gifted, that best apply for me? And that takes self-awareness. And so, especially in today's society, self-awareness is a diminishing reality because of technology, because of the stimulation of all these voices vying for our attention, and because of the addictions of social media and other things in life. We're becoming less and less aware of who we are and why we actually do what we do. So I think even from a societal standpoint, it's just massively important.
There's something almost satanic in my mind about social media. Not that I'm not on social media, but I think that anytime anything is attractive, anything is good, there's a real danger of either making an idol of it, or just, you know, if some food tastes really, really, really good and it's around, it's very hard not to eat that food. And I feel like that's what social media is. It's like the free market has delivered something that is right there, literally at our fingertips, very tempting, because the greatest minds in the world have tried to figure out how to get you to stay right there. And they're not asking, is it good for you in the long term?
No.
They just know that they can make a lot of money that way, and it's a free country, free economy, and people can make money, and so they make money. But very few people are really asking, where is this leading me?
Totally. One of my favorite quotes on this is actually from Ryan Holiday's book, Conspiracy. Another guy said, every great cause begins as a movement, turns into a business, and degenerates into a racket. And you see this with social media.
Say that again.
Every great cause begins as a movement, turns into a business, and then degenerates into a racket. And social media is a great example of that. Great cause. Connecting friends and family across the world. Amazing, right? Business. Now it's becoming a business. People are making money, and it's degenerated into a racket. You know, so I think we see this in many arenas, and it shouldn't be surprising. I think it's human nature in a lot of ways.
Well, no, it is human nature, and this is why it's so important to understand human nature, and again, why I approach life from a biblical perspective. The idea that human beings are fallen, and that when human beings get power, the temptation is to use that power for selfish ends. Mm. So Google and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Amazon, they get more and more and more and more power, and it's really hard for them not to use that power in what I would see as a selfish way, and it gets really scary.
Yeah.
And you have to have at least the self-awareness to know how the world works and what is going on. But so what do young people do who live in a world where everybody's on their phone? You order food on your phone. You do everything on your phone. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think discipline is needed, right? Like, discipline is the most foundational thing, because in structure we can flourish most. That's where true freedom's found, right? So having disciplines around these things help us, give us space, because if we can realize that what's important are human beings and not our telephones, it can really help us. And I think it's practical things like shutting your phone. One of the things I love doing is turning your phone on airplane mode at night. And 30 minutes before you go to bed, airplane mode. And then leave it on for a couple hours on airplane mode when you wake up. No one needs to talk to you. You don't need to talk to anyone else. Like, you're not the center of the universe, you know? So that's like a really practical boundary that you can put in place. But I love what you talked about earlier, because our goal isn't to abstain, it's to redeem, right? It's not to say we're not in the world, we're not of the world, but we're in the world, right? So how do we not just like say, I'm going to remove it? Maybe that's good for a time, but how do we redeem it for good, use it for good, and not be used by it?
Well, that's a very thoughtful and, I would say, accurate perspective. And what a great tip. Half an hour before you go to sleep, put it on airplane mode. That's something, I mean, if people listening to this program would do that, These are life-changing little things. And I really do think that we've become so saturated that some people are beginning to realize, I need to do something. This is sick.
Totally. I think the majority of people are now beginning to realize that they need to do something. But there's a difference between preaching truth yourself and believing truth. Preaching it is saying that and agreeing with that. Believing it is acting on it. That's the only way you actually believe that truth is if you act on it. So we have to act it into existence. I love another quote. Millard Fuller, I think, said, it's a lot easier to act your way into a new way of thinking than to think your way into a new way of acting.
So. Act your way into a new way of thinking, think your way. Well, and also that's because we're human beings and what we do affects us.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I've often said this, in, whether I'm speaking or preaching, that you know you can say you believe something, but if you really believe it, it'll be reflected in your actions. Yeah. Otherwise, you're playing games. You're using words, but you're not really, really believing it. Less than a minute left. Okay, advice for 20-year-olds listening.
I think if we can just all take ownership and never settle, that'll take care of a lot of our problems. We have to have a why, like you said before. We have to have a reason why we're sacrificing in the short run to get the long-term reward. And if it's a compelling enough reason why, then there's no reason why we shouldn't take ownership of our lives and never settle for less than we're capable of.
Well, it's interesting. As I said, you're very introspective, and that's reflected. I'm sure there's a lot of practical stuff in the book. We've been keeping these, you know, at a pretty general level, but it's just wonderful that you, at this young age, through the crucible of playing golf, getting an injury, have picked up some of this stuff, and I'm just thrilled that you can pass it along to others. The book is From Here to There, A Quarter-Life Perspective on the Path to Mastery. Thane Marcus Ringler, thank you for being my guest. Terrific to meet you.
Thanks, Eric. A lot of fun. Enjoyed it.
Barley nightly beside the green grass, swing swing the spinning step, you wear those shoes and I will wear that dress.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
Hey there, folks. That's Kansas. Albin, Kansas.
Kansas.
I love Kansas. Yeah. Okay, so this is basically Labor Day is here. There are a lot of people, even as we're talking, they're running out the door.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even listening. Hey, before you go out the door, I want to give you one last chance to give to Food for the Poor. This is it, the campaign is over. This is not in the news. This is huge right now. You have a refugee crisis. It's the largest refugee crisis ever in the Americas. People are fleeing Venezuela like the Titanic. Okay, this is it's a nation that is going down. I think we've made the case on this program before that socialism typically, you know, it's this utopianist idea that says we want to help everybody, but it ends in destroying wealth and everybody suffers, more people suffer. So people are fleeing Venezuela. And you got to think, while we're looking forward to weekends at the beach, right now, people can't feed their kids. So I just want to say, before you go, it's your last chance to give anything to people who are really suffering. Food for the Poor is a great organization. So I want to say to you, if you have any ability, folks, please pick up the phone, 844-863-HOPE. I know there are folks right now. You could do it. Obviously, you have your cell phones. You could do this in a second. 844-863-HOPE. Anything you give, you're entered into a drawing to win our grand prize, which you're going to get copies of my books in Dutch, German, Chinese, you name
it. And that's no joke.
And I'm not even joking. No. Honestly, it's just a crazy, crazy thing. And it would be fun if you won. I mean, if you give $10, $15, $20, whatever you give, you'll be entered in to win.
And every $50, that's another chance.
Yeah, every $50, you'll get another chance to win. So if you give $200, that provides 5,000 nutritious meals through Food for the Poor. Can you imagine what you can do with $200? I want to say all of us who've been blessed to live in a free country. We're not living in a socialist zone. We are we're very blessed, and so it's incumbent on us to do what we can. And so the only question is how, and so I'm suggesting right now Food for the Poor, an organization we've worked with. They're on the ground in Latin America. This is the final day. These are the final days. This weekend it's over. So if you want to go to metaxastalk.com, you can click on the banner, or you can go to 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. Sometimes it's nice to talk to a person, 844-863-HOPE. You really, you're doing great things. Obviously, it's tax deductible. Obviously, we need your help. Otherwise, we wouldn't be asking. But it is a great cause. And we haven't really said this much, but I hope when you do this, you'll pray for the folks down there, because it's just unimaginable for most of us in the United States what people are going through. My parents experienced this growing up in Europe. To not be able to feed your kids is horrifying, tragic, very sad. So please go to 844-863-HOPE. Give what you can, 844-863-HOPE, or you can just go to metaxastalk.com, metaxastalk.com. We've got all things we want to give you as a thank you, but I know that's not why you give. You give because it's the right thing to do. So to those of you who have given and are giving, thank you so much. God bless you as you give.
General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.